My name is Andrew Stotz, and I'll be your host as we continue our journey into the teachings of Dr. W. Edwards Deming. Today, I'm continuing my discussion with David P. Langford, who has devoted his life to applying Dr. Deming's philosophy to education, and he offers us his practical advice for implementation. Today's topic is the difference between testing and ranking students. David, take it away.
Okay, well, if you're an educator, that should be a trigger enough for you to pay attention and listen to this. So I want to tie this in with Deming thinking and the difference and what people are trying to do with equity and all kinds of things that are going on today. So, and it's pretty relevant too, because I just watched a newscast that a school district was delaying or even not announcing their national merit scholars because of the fear that it would make other children feel bad because they weren't recognized like that.
Mm.
So it's kind of like what Dagwood said in the comics one time, sounds like a good idea until you think about it. So I wanted to discuss that today because over the last 40 years, I've run seminars and talked about Dr. Deming's focus of rating and ranking and grading. And he's just, you know, really against grading. And I pulled up a quote from the New Economics. He says, our educational system would be improved immeasurably by abolishment of grading. Okay. So there's a difference between grading and actually just testing. So let's just talk for a minute about the National Merit Scholarship Program. So I just read some stats on that. About over 1 million students actually apply for a National Merit Scholarship each year, and only about 50,000 are selected. And how are those kids selected? Well, when you're a junior in high school, you take the PSAT test. And if you, you know, have one of the 50,000 scores that are the highest in the nation, then you could be named as a National Merit Scholar. And that could mean a lot of things. I mean, it could help you get scholarships to other universities. It could really look good on your resume for the rest of your life. It could be a lot of things. So is that the same thing that Deming talks about by grading and ranking people? And I would say no, because what really should be happening, instead of thinking that by honoring or naming people that are recognizing people that took this test and got one of the top 50,000 scores, that that's going to make other people feel bad, therefore we're not going to announce that, or we're not going to recognize that, is not the same thing.
Mm.
When you're grading and ranking people, you actually have to grade their performance in order to rank them, right? And talking about Deming's concept of profound knowledge, the variation in that is huge, and the psychology in that is huge. I'm sure that almost every single person can relate to a classroom where they probably told somebody, you know, I don't think this teacher likes me. I don't know why, but I just don't think they like me for some reason.
And it's no confirmed at the end of the semester when I get my grade.
Yeah. No matter how hard I try or whatever, I just don't think they like me. Mm. And I know it's happened to me at times. And I just thought, well, I'll just, you know, I got choices. I could drop the class, or I could just put up with it and, you know, and go through that. So, you know, psychological things like that could enter in, and then all the socioeconomic stuff that we've got going on now could enter in, and ethics could enter in, and all kinds of things could enter into someone giving someone a grade, like in a classroom, and then ranking them against other students. Mm. Right? That's a totally different thing. If I could give this school district, and I'm not going to name them because I don't want to get in trouble or anything. So, but if I could give this school district advice, what you should be trying to do is get as many students as possible into that level of national merit ranking. Because it's not limited, as far as I know, it's not limited that you can only have one per school or something.
Mm.
You could have as many as qualify, you know, and that would show what a elite school you are, actually, that you have more people qualifying for a national merit scholarships than any place else, and drive other people to think, okay, if they can do that, I can do that, right?
And can we go into that more detail, just so we really break it down to understand, you know, when someone, I guess, voluntarily, as a student does with this national merit scholarship, goes into some sort of competition or measurement or something like that, that's different from a school teacher and a school administrator, you know, observing the behaviors and actions of the students and then coming up with a ranking of that environment that they're living in every day. Explain how that's different.
Just a test that they take, and they all go into the room, 300 kids go into a room, and they take this test, and whoever gets the best score qualifies. That's all there is to it. So you have no idea that if they're, you know, male, female, tall, short, skinny or not, or none of that enters in. So there's no real psychology to it. You just go in and take the test. And if you got it, you get the score, you get the ranking, or it's not a ranking. It's just, you just achieve that level of being able to pass that test.
And so from a school perspective, I can see that. Then the next question is, from a bigger picture society perspective, is that person now ranking themselves, or, you know, is there some problem with that from a country perspective that people are entering a competition like that?
Well, would I want to put in the hard work it takes? Because when I look at kids that achieve that level of performance, I see years and years, 10, 12 years, some cases, of hard work, of always working hard to be a top student. And, you know, they may or may not be like ranked as the 4.0 students in their schools. That has nothing to do with that, but they may be really good at taking tests, or they'd be really good at studying for this, or they may have family members that are super supportive. You know, maybe you have two parents that are both college professors, right? Well, I would think that they would have more emphasis on a national merit scholarship and the importance of that, and be communicating that throughout this child's entire life, than a sharecropper's child in Georgia that has nothing to do with the school system except taking his kid to school every day, right?
And
those are two totally different situations.
And in that case, if that person, let's say, you know, that person's, let's say a family this is the first kid to have a chance to go to university, as an example. And if that family found out about this national merit scholarship and they told their son or daughter, hey, why don't you set that as a goal to try to take that exam when you're 14 or 16 or 18? Is there a problem with that?
Quality around here.
No, I don't see any problem with that at all. You have a bar that you're setting, and if you get over this bar, then basically you win. But it has nothing to do with rating and ranking the individuals.
And it's part of it that it's like a third party, a separate entity that you're going to. It's kind of a voluntary thing, as opposed to a system that's imposed on the teachers and the students and everybody in the school.
As nothing to do with your school, basically. I mean, you could be at the best or worst schools in the world, right? Mm-hmm. And either pass this test or not pass. And it's not about passing this test. It's who actually gets the best scores, one of the top 50,000 scores per year to be named this. So,
if we look at the teachers in the school that have decided, and the administrators who have decided to do this action, let's just say that their intentions are good in the one sense that, like we've talked about here, when a student does really well on an assignment, the idea that you've talked about is, hey, how did you do that? Why don't you explain that to the other students and share how, you know, what you're doing and stuff? You know, I suspect what they're afraid of is that it's glorifying these really elite students within the school, and that the other students don't get the opportunity, or they feel less of themselves. The teachers are trying, let's just assume that the teachers are trying to do something good, but they're maybe misdirected. What would be a better idea within the school?
Well, I wouldn't refrain at all from recognizing those students and saying, hey, these are the ones that took the test and are now national merit scholars. And you know, I suppose there could be an over glorification of mm-hmm. that you could go overboard with that. But to those students that are actually taking that test, they obviously know what it means, right? And the recognition that could come with it. And that could mean other college scholarships that if you're a national merit scholar and that, you know, it could look really good going to a major university or something. And it could actually end up in dollar values. And I think that's one of the things that the parents were complaining about is by not naming these kids in a timely fashion. Apparently they withheld the names of these kids. Because they withheld the names of these kids, some of them would miss out on being able to put that on their scholarship mm-hmm. applications to universities, or even if you're just going to go get a job, you know, that would look good on a resume and things like that. But the difference to me is that's not a rating and ranking.
Right.
It's simply a count data, right? Everybody takes the test and whoever got the top scores, then they get the recognition. So that's all there is to it.
If we were to look at another parallel and just trying to understand how Deming thinks and, you know, this concept, let's take a wrestling team as an example, where there is a team score kind of thing and an individual performance, as opposed to, let's say, a football team where really it's a team performance. And let's say that the wrestling coach has worked hard with their team and they're doing really well. And they've got a couple of really strong wrestlers and they compete and they win the state championship. And, you know, two of their wrestlers win the best in their weight class or whatever that is. Should that be celebrated by the school as, you know, an accomplishment, or is that rating and ranking? How do we view something like that?
No, of course it should be celebrated and kids recognized, et cetera, because those things take a tremendous amount of hard work. I don't know if you've ever were a wrestler, but I did that once upon a time.
I looked at it once and I thought, yeah, I can't work. I'm not going to work that hard on that because that looks brutal.
Yeah. So not only do you get your own personal score, but those scores are all added up as a team, and that team score is what determines if, you know, your team beats somebody else's team or you become the state championship team, et cetera. But the schools that are really good at developing wrestlers, right, they don't think about just having one person who's, you know, like state championship level, right? Hmm. They're developing a whole deep program that year after year after year, they have a plethora of top wrestlers that are moving into that upper echelon and can work that through. And, you know, there's also a good example. When I was a first year band teacher, the school I was at, the high school, was really into wrestling. And, so I asked the wrestling teacher, I said, would you like to have a pep band at the wrestling meet? And first he thought it was kind of nuts. And he said, well, you know, I don't know. He said, let's try that, you know, let's see what that was like. So I got a bunch of volunteer kids and we got a whole drum corps and everything. We choreographed this whole thing. So there was like music going, announcing the wrestlers. There was music in between and then there were drum beats going on, everything. Well, we ended up wrestling against this school that they had hardly ever beat. And we just like clobbered them, because the psychology of what we created was this momentum of
energy.
Wow, we're invincible and we're the, you know, one of the top programs in the state and so on and so forth. So I thought the wrestling coach was going to kiss me afterwards. And so he really liked that. But I mean, that's a really kind of a good example, I think, that you can manipulate these things to a large degree psychologically. If you think about profound knowledge and the psychology behind things, you can manipulate things to get the data to show, you know, different things. Were these kids all the best wrestlers? No, I'd say probably we intimidated the other wrestlers, you know, and in an equal environment someplace, you know, our kids may have not been able to beat these other kids, you know. Mm. because of what went on. So, but the point is that you're trying to develop the depth of a system and a program so that you continually have great wrestlers, not relying on the fact that, oh, once every 12 years, we just have some naturally gifted kid that comes in. I saw this when I was a teacher in Alaska, and we had this student as a junior in high school, and he could pick up a 50-gallon barrel of oil and pick it up and put it in the back of a pickup. And that was his job. And he came to the school, and the wrestling coach said, well, you know, how would you like to come out for the wrestling team? And he said, well, I've never done that before, junior in high school. Well, he ended up being state champion 2 years in a row. And basically he didn't have near as much training or talent as anybody else, but if he ever got a hold of somebody, they were done, because he would just like
put him in the truck,
force him to the ground. So, I mean, to me, that's, you know, and that had nothing to do with our wrestling program or the development or anything. It's just a kid that had grown up, you know, super talented. So, or super strong. Mm. To me, it's also sort of the basic same kind of thing we're talking about with this PSAT test and the National Merit Scholarship, et cetera, et cetera. Are you really recognizing who's the most brilliant or who's just really worked the hardest?
Right.
I mean, there's probably an element of both from the neuroscience standpoint. You know, there's development of all those neural structures and everything else that enabled these kids. But I would also submit that probably some of those kids were just much better at photographic memories of remembering stuff and excelling. You know, they're just born with that, right? And it just was much easier for them to get there. But that doesn't preclude other kids that really want to work really hard at preparing for that test and really, you know, working for that. And that's a goal or an aim that they might have, that they really want to try to do that. So
I would love to wrap this up by just kind of circling back to, what's the objective of school? What's the objective of a business? What is the function of an individual within that system? What is the function or the objective of the management of that system and of the individual? What are we trying to do? So that we just go back to first principles to make sure that the listeners, the viewers, are going back to those first principles to say, let's make sure we're doing the right thing. You know, so can you describe from, you know, as simply as possible, what you think?
To wrap this up, you know, I will give you two words that I learned from Deming that just became imprinted on me over the years. And that's artificial scarcity. So when you're creating an artificial scarcity of top marks or top performance or anything like that, then that's bad. That's going to have a detrimental effect on people. And, you know, we've talked about valedictorians and all those kinds of things. That's really an artificial scarcity. You're actually, you know, that's why some school districts are, you know, grading kids to 1/1000 of a point, et cetera. So, because they got too many valedictorians. Well, that's just the opposite of what you should be thinking about. Should be thinking about, can we get more and more and more people to this level? The same thing that we're talking about with the wrestling program. Can we have a program that's producing more and more and more, you know, better athletes? And so that's a true system and a program. And, you know, that's the same thing. So you always want to watch out. Am I creating an artificial scarcity? You know, I have 5 children, and, you know, the example is, would I ever rank my 5 children and say who's the best or who's not? Well, anybody who knows anything about parenting would say, no, that'd be a very stupid thing to do, right? Be very foolish to do that. And they all have different gifts. They all have different skills and gifts and it's backgrounds, et cetera.
I'm thinking about also natural scarcity, where let's say a family does not have the means to put all 5 of their kids through school, and they have to choose one and say, look, we're going to put everything behind, you know, and everybody knows that, you know, Bobby is the one that we think can be successful with the money that we have for university, as an example, which I would say is more natural scarcity than artificial scarcity.
Yeah, even that, I mean, to me, that's a concept that may have been true 60 years ago.
Yeah.
It's not true today. every single kid that wants to go to, you know, even if you don't have the scores to get into a certain school you wanted to get into, okay, go to a community college for 2 years. And yep. many states, yep. the state pay for it and it's for free. And right.
Yep. Yep.
And so that's a level of trying to level the playing field, that so it's not just reliant on who the rich that can get to that level.
Yep.
So
let's go back and try to I just want to try to wrap up what was you're saying about the goal is to try to, how do we get more people to this level? And what I'm thinking about is PDSA. What I'm thinking about is training, figuring out what's working, and then bringing that
systems thinking, psychology, understanding variation. It's Deming's system of profound knowledge is what you need to be applying, that your system gets better and better and better and better, so that virtually anybody that comes to your school, maybe they won't rise to that level of one of the top 50,000 in the country, but everybody is getting better and better and better. And what are we doing in the system that's preventing more and more kids to get to that level of performance? It's the way you want to think about it. So you're not creating an artificial scarcity of people.
I remember Elon Musk being quoted as saying something like, we need to launch more rockets, when he was talking about how to get better at what they were doing with landing and reusing the rockets and all that. And I just think about, in my case, with my Valuation Masterclass Bootcamp, which is a purely online system focused on a very specific thing. It's voluntary, where people are signing up. And so it's very different than, let's say, a public school. But the point is that every time we launch, we have new things that we apply from what we learn in the prior one. And as I tell my students in the current Valuation Masterclass Bootcamp number 7, if they studied in number 5, it's a completely different course. And I'm just thinking about all the different iterations, and we stick with the things that work, and then we build and add on the next thing. And that's ultimately, I guess, the job of us inside a business, inside a school, inside any process, is how do we find what works?
What you're trying to do is to create a system where people are gaining knowledge that's useful and applicable in the future. One of the quotes that Deming had was, why would I rate and rank my students? You know, how could I determine who amongst them is going to be great in the future? So why would I want to limit them now with a grade? It took me years to understand what that meant, but until you've actually seen hundreds of students move through and students in high school and stuff, where you think, oh, that kid's not going to, they're never going to amount to anything. And all of a sudden, you know, they're state senator, or they're doing something 20 years from now that you have no idea, right? But maybe they had to overcome your rating and ranking in order to think that that was possible, or that they were capable of doing that kind of thing.
Yeah. And I went back to my high school records, and I found that my GPA in high school was 2.6. I was firmly in the middle of my ranking of my high school. I was getting high basically most of the time and doing other stuff, and I wasn't really paying attention. My parents weren't like pushing me that hard. They were just like, you know, try your best and whatever. And, you know, they didn't want to see me drop out, but I was definitely on that path. And I think most people thought I wouldn't succeed. But then my last semester of university, I had 7 classes, and 6 of them I got A's. And the 7th one I took at another university and I got a B. And, you know, something switched in me, and I overcame that rating and ranking. And, you know, the fire of learning was lit under me. And I think maybe we'll wrap it up by saying that, you know, the whole objective of what we're trying to do is develop systems and processes that really work to set children on fire with the excitement of learning and figuring things out and finding things out, with the objective that they're going to live a better life. They're going to have more joy and more, they're going to understand things around them. They're going to be able to make an impact around them. And if we can do that, I would say we're doing a pretty darn good thing. Anything you would add to that?
Well, it leads into, and maybe we can discuss this in a later podcast too, about, you know, I've worked with a lot of universities and stuff, and I'll get meet with them, and I'll hear phrases like, oh, we're one of the most selective universities in the state or the nation or whatever. And we turn out the best graduates. Well, just go to a random selection of students, you know, have a bar that you want everybody to get to a certain level. And when they do, everybody's name goes in the hat and you draw out however many slots you have open. Now everybody would know how they're chosen. And if you can take those randomly selected students and turn out the best graduates in the country, I would acknowledge that. Yeah, you've got a tremendous school. Mm-hmm. But if all you're doing is selecting, going through a rigorous process to select the people that are going to fit your program, you're probably not doing much of anything, you know, and you're not really developing a system of greatness where virtually anybody that comes here is going to become great. And I would submit, you know, kind of wrap this up, that every teacher is going through that very same thing, right? Because students are thrown into their classrooms usually in just random selection, right? So if you can develop a system by which, no matter who's thrown into my class, even kids with special needs, I'm able to move them to a level of performance that nobody else is able to, you know, get these kids to, the very same kids. And next year they go into another class and they're not able to achieve that, right? Well, I would say you probably have created a fantastic teaching system, right? That no matter who I get, I'm able to get them to a very high level of performance. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the same thing that, you know, this whole podcast is about. You should be thinking about getting everybody to that level. Mm-hmm. And what are we doing as a system that's standing in the way, that's preventing people from getting to that level of performance? So you mentioned a company, right? You don't just want one great worker, right? You want everybody to be great.
Yep.
Otherwise you don't have a system that's, you know, continually producing great products. So,
yeah. Well, David, on behalf of everyone at the Deming Institute, I want to thank you again for this discussion. And for listeners, remember to go to deming.org to continue your journey. And listeners can learn more about David at langfordlearning.com. This is your host, Andrew Stotz. And I'll leave you with one of my favorite quotes from Dr. Deming, and it just never gets old. People are entitled to joy in work.